Whatever you're building, you're creating more value than you think you are. I started pricing Superstarter at $49, and I was thinking no one would be willing to pay that amount of money for it. But after some time and after some feedback, I realized how much value I actually created with it.
Hi, and welcome to the Code & Conquer podcast. You might have seen those starter kit templates a lot of people are using to get ahead while building their own SaaS products. Today, we're talking to one of the people that are actually building those templates. We're talking to Jonathan Wilke, the creator of Superstarter, a Next.js starter kit. We'll talk about how he started his business, how you can set yourself apart in a busy niche, and what the future holds for him and his project. I hope you enjoy this episode. Let's jump right in. And welcome to the 12th episode of the Code & Conquer podcast. Today, my guest is Jonathan Wilke, a fellow German indie hacker. Hi, Jonathan. How are you? Who are you? And what are you doing here?
Hi, Tobias. First one to pronounce my name correctly in a podcast. It's good to be here. Yeah, I'm Jonathan. I'm Jonathan, a full stack developer from Germany. And I'm probably most known on the internet for creating Superstarter, which we are probably talking a little bit more about later. Yeah, nice to be here.
Yeah, we're going to talk a lot about Superstarter, your biggest indie hacker project for now. But first, we always start a little bit further down the road at the start of some people's career. And I usually ask the question, how did you actually break into the world of SaaS and indie hacking? What was your start coming into this? And also, are you a non-technical or a technical founder?
Yeah, very technical founder. So that's actually the point where I got into indie hacking, because I am a developer. That's my job. That's what I learned. That's what I do in my day job. And actually, my way into indie hacking was this side project called Superstarter, which I built basically for my own need, because I had to build some client projects and found myself rebuilding the same stuff over and over again. And that's why I created this boilerplate, which some point became a product I sold.
I think that those are the best products to build as an indie hacker when you know you have at least one user, right? You have yourself.
Yeah, totally. And that takes away the risk of wasting your time, because at the end, even if no one pays for it, then at least you have a product or something that you can use yourself.
And what is Superstarter exactly, and how did you get the idea? Well, you already answered part of that, but what is it exactly?
So it's a starter kit or boilerplate, which basically takes away a lot of the initial setup when you build a SaaS application. In this specific case, it's built with Next.js. There are a lot of starter kits out there. And so it comes with the most typical functionality that a SaaS has, like authentication. So some kind of user management. It gives you the basic setup for payments, for subscriptions. And also in my case, which is something that might make this thing stand a little out, is internationalization. So it basically prepares your SaaS application to scale up later, so you don't have to do all that stuff. And also, of course, saves you a lot of time and in the end money.
And I think we're going to talk about it later, if what other people are saying about projects or products like this. But in my case, and as a little disclaimer, I'm also using your project right now for my own SaaS business. So I think there's a lot of value in products like this. Regarding the point of your journey that you are on, you just tweeted that Superstarter now makes you more money than your day job has. Mm-hmm. How long have you worked on Superstarter to get to that point? And to get serious MRR down the road, surpassing your current day job now?
Yeah, so first of all, I have to note that this is not monthly recurring revenue. It's revenue I made this month. But since Superstarter is a one-time purchase, I currently don't have a recurring revenue from it. And that means, of course, it's hard work and a lot of marketing to get to the same point in the next month. But now, a little bit over a year of work and marketing, I'm actually the first time at the point where it surpassed my day job income. And the thing is that it varies a lot. Like, I had months before where it surpassed like 2/3 of it, and then it became less because there was the old Next.js version. Everyone started to use the new app router, and there were no more sales. And when I released the new version, then it increased by a lot. And yeah, now it's at the highest point it ever was. But as I said, it will take a lot of work and also new features from my side to keep that stream steady, because everyone who already bought it will not buy it again because he keeps the access. And yeah, I just have to find new customers to get more income.
You have to find at least the same amount of customers every month. How are you dealing with that challenge? Because if you don't work, right, no new customers will come in after a little while.
Yeah. So you have to say that it's currently just a side project. It's not the most important thing to me to keep steady revenue, steady income from it. But of course, it would be nice. And of course, it's something I'm working on. What I'm trying to do is to extend the boilerplate further, so add new features. And I'm also thinking about offering additional features that will come that you have to pay for extra. So if there is some really huge things, so currently considering a mobile app extension, that is something you have to buy additionally, because there was new development effort from my side. So it's something that you will have to pay extra for. But I'm also considering some options where actually recurring revenue would be the goal, or would be the payment method, so to speak, which would be something like support plans or maybe additional, like I'm thinking about a SaaS application that supports you on creating the application components. Something like, you have seen this V1 probably released by Vercel. V0. And I actually thought about something similar, AI-based, that will know your brand's design, so will keep that consistent and not require you to always have to say, okay, now make that blue and now make that red. So that is something that will then create a component for you, but with the knowledge of the architecture of Superstar, so that it will be code that you can directly copy into your application, and that it also has the schema for the database, all the stuff that's included with API requests and so on, so that you can basically visually generate or create your UI and then just have to copy the code into it, which will be incredibly helpful for Superstar users, but can also be helpful for people who are not using Superstar but just want to have this initial code set up for certain UIs. That would be something that could be paid monthly because you're constantly using it. So there's recurring value so that you can actually charge on a monthly basis.
I think you also talked somewhere on your website or something, or in the roadmap, about also doing something like this generative AI stuff for integrating new database objects into Superstar, right?
Yes, that would probably be related to this SaaS application, because the idea would be not only to create like small components like for a marketing page, but actually more complex parts of the application. Like say you want to have a new blog post management in your admin UI, where you could directly get the UI, including validation rules and also all the API requests set up for you. And that would, of course, require the database schema or the database setup already included.
We will talk about the tech stack in general later. Mm-hmm. We have a nerd zone part of the interview coming up where the non-technical people that are a little overwhelmed can stop listening to the recording. But more generally, as a question, doesn't that also mean, we're talking about Prisma, we're talking about Next.js 13 now, we're talking about Superbase, which might change part of their platform, you kind of always have to keep all of those technologies in your site to be able to then update the template or the starter kit to that new version or the new library or the new framework. How does that feel to kind of, you kind of never can stop doing this project, right?
Well, let's put it this way. The web technology is probably one of the fastest evolving in the world, but I've picked the technologies in a way that the tools I choose have a very promising future, let's put it that way, and have large communities around it so that they are at least supported for a long time. But of course, there will be a constant work of updating things and keeping them, like, just see that app router example. It suddenly required me to basically start from scratch because there was a whole new paradigm in this area or in this framework that we have to adapt to. Yeah, and of course, there will be work needed.
I think it's a completely different way, which the reason that I was very happy that I got you on the podcast is because your project is so much different to the typical SaaS indie hacker project, mm-hmm. because it must feel very different to having a SaaS that brings in subscriptions, right? And kind of sustains on at least some level when you stop working. In this case, to me, it feels more stressful. I'm not sure what your opinion is on that, that you kind of always have to work for it, always have to update it,
yeah.
and never really can stop with it.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of stress to it. But the interesting thing is that we have, for supporting the customers, we have a Discord channel. And actually, it starts to become a community of people mm-hmm. building with Superstarter, so that I'm actually, that there's actually work taking off from my side, because other people start supporting, or customers start supporting each other, because they've maybe run into the same problem. And so when, because of the time zone differences, when I'm asleep and someone requests something in the channel, then someone else who's awake at that time might actually be able to answer that question before I can.
Was that something you planned on, or was that something that just came about when you didn't really think about it?
Actually, the latter. It was. I actually thought there was going to be more pressure and work on myself due to this, but that evolved, and it's really nice. And to be honest, there are. I mean, you know it because you're part of the community, but mm-hmm. there are not that many support requests, because most of the people are developers themselves and know already a lot of it. And at a certain point, it stops to be. That sounds a little bit brutal, but it stops to be my problem, because mm-hmm. it's something that is not related to the starter kit, but rather to their specific use case. Of course, that's something they sometimes mention in the channel and actually might get help or feedback on, but at a certain point, there are other places where they ask for support, because it's then something very specific to, I don't know, the OpenAI integration or whatever.
Yeah, at some point it's just the starter kit. And yes. if I start adding my own business logic, of course there will be bugs exactly. in my own logic. So not really reaching out to you for that. But regarding that, starting with the starter kit, I had just read a Twitter tweet, or an X tweet now, where people criticize templates like Superstarter, and I thought the argument is interesting. It wasn't a troll post. It was just someone that mm-hmm. had a different opinion. And the argument was that you will be slowed down because the developer might have another... We all have our own style, right? And the developer might have another style than you. You're trying to understand their code. You're slowing yourself down by starting with starter kits like this. I'm not going to say my own opinion before you, but what do you think about that? And how do you try to soften that issue for your project? Yeah.
So I read the same tweet, and or is it post now, right? It's not tweets anymore because it's X.com. Yeah. So I read the same post, and actually I have an opinion on that. And my opinion is that, yes, when you have one very, very specific stack that you are completely familiar with, that you could start every application and don't have to Google anything about, that might slow you down when you start with something that is maybe not 100% your stack, but there's a new tool that you have to learn. But on the one hand side, that slowdown might not even be a problem, because you saved so much time in the beginning that, and it's not days, it's actually weeks or even months of work that went into the starter kit. And so there's also a lot of documentation that might actually help you. I'm trying to create as much content around it to even make that less complicated for you to get into. And the second point, why I think it's not that valid, that it slows you down, is that I try to pick the most popular tools that are out there. So probably most of the things most of the tools are the ones that you would already pick. Things like Next.js, things like Prisma, things like TRPC are very, very popular in the community. So I'm not trying to pick any like 2-star package from GitHub just because I think it's cool. So I try to pick the stack that most people use and the tools that are most fitting for this kind of application. but at the same time have the most flexibility for you to build the application you need and not try to force you in one direction so you can only build this specific kind of application.
I'm of your opinion. I'm obviously using your project, and I think that I'm not going to go into detail too much, but I think that the whole React scene is kind of moving between Next.js and Remix. So having a template that is done for one of the biggest frameworks right now is kind of a good pick for a starter kit. And also, the other thing is that you're not the only one selling starter kits. So there is a market for it, and people are buying these things and are developing SaaS projects with it. But there is the question then, how do you succeed when all of these people are selling starter kits? Another big example in the indie hacker space is Mark Luvion right now, who just shipped his own version of the starter kit, which is different to yours. Exactly. So there's still a market for it. But how do you stand out if so many people are doing starter kits, and also there are free starter kits by Next themselves, for example? How do you stand out then and actually sell something like this successfully?
I'm first going to answer the comparison to the free starter kits. Yes, there are some really, really good starter kits by Vercel and also by Superbase or something like that. But when you compare them, they're mostly focused on one thing. So maybe authentication starter, or maybe the integration of authentication and the subscriptions with Stripe or something. But the starter kits that are offered for money have a lot more features than that. So as I said, they integrate internationalization, they integrate a fully designed marketing page, a fully designed dashboard. They include things like account management, profile picture uploads, and all that stuff. And so there's so much more that these starter kits don't consider, or actually don't have to consider, because it's not about that. It's about showing how to set these specific things up or how to connect them, but they are not meant to be a fully-fledged SaaS starter kit. And in terms of how to stand out or how to stand out of the other templates that are offered, I think this space is really huge, and there's a place for even more starter templates, because just what you said, there's many different stacks, and maybe if you say this one slows me down because that's not completely my stack, there might be a starter template that is exactly your stack, or maybe 95% your stack. Mm-hmm. And so every starter template has a different set of features and targets slightly different kind of application. And so in my case, I moved a little bit away from the focus on Superbase as the backend for your application and tried to go a little bit broader so that you only need a database, whatever that might be, Postgres, MySQL, MongoDB, whatever. And from there, you can just pick the tools you want. You can deploy to Netlify, you can deploy to Vercel, you can host it yourself on Railway or Render or whatever. And so every starter kit has its own target group, just basically limited by the tools you include.
How do you actually then market stuff like this? Of course, Twitter is one of the funnels, right? But how do you market Superstarter in general? And does it differ from when you just started out versus now?
Yeah, so in the beginning, I didn't market it at all, because it was just a side project where I thought, okay, when it makes me some money. So my initial goal was to make $1,000 of it. And actually, it took some while to get there. So I think it actually took 2.5 or 3 months to get to $1,000 of revenue. Of course, that was due to a very, very small audience. The first kind of marketing I did was to share the landing page on Twitter, where at that point I had, like, I think it was 80 followers on Twitter. So of course, the audience wasn't that tall and that large. And the sales very, very slowly increased. But then I started to notice, okay, when I create more content around it, that actually pulls people to the site, and they might consider that, because creating content also creates some kind of trust, because they know, they realize, okay, obviously they are involved into that topic and they know about that topic. So it might make sense to trust them that the application or the starter template they build makes sense. And then I started to like at least publish more about Superstarter everywhere. There are pages where you can, there are actually lists of starter kits that you can filter by technology. So I'm listed on all of them, which also took a while to get into them. And the biggest marketing effort I've recently taken is to sponsor the Next.js weekly newsletter, which is a very cool newsletter when you're in the Next.js ecosystem. And that was probably the best target group I could get because Next.js is the center of this starter kit. But to be honest, I have a lot of room to grow in terms of marketing, and I'm far away from being an expert in this area. I mean, this was the first product I sold online and still is. I have had no idea how to do marketing at all. So I'm just doing my best to learn every day something new about it. And yeah, still looking for other ways to market the product better.
Have you ever considered doing marketing for it by building a SaaS with the starter kit?
Actually, I did, and I still plan to do that. So my December is completely free because I quit my job and will at the earliest start by the beginning of next year. So I plan to use the December, besides the holidays, to create as much content as possible for Superstarter. And one plan there is to create a video tutorial series where I actually build a real application with Superstarter. So that will be a very fun and interesting project I'm looking forward to.
That sounds pretty cool. Do you already have an idea what you're going to build?
No. So if you if you have any idea what I could build, let me know.
Oh, man. I have like two or three SaaS ideas every week. I will check my notes and come back to you with that.
Yeah, definitely. We can make a good deal on that.
Yeah. I think ideas are not really worth much, but we can see.
In the end, you have to admit that this video series will be more about how to build the SaaS, not so much if it's going to be a successful one.
Yeah, exactly. With your starter kit, I'm building my newest SaaS right now. And what I actually thought about was the other way around, building the SaaS and kind of promoting it with doing a new podcast about it. And the main reason to make a second podcast for it would be that I need a podcast to test the SaaS with. So I'm kind of building in a triangle where I need the SaaS and I need the podcast to then test the podcast, to then make content. And it could lead to like a really weird endless loop there.
But again, you're doing the good thing of solving your own problem there. That's probably, for me, that's the best way to start something or to get an idea. Look at your own problems and you will very likely find something to solve.
Yeah, I think it was like that for all the serious businesses that I started or serious projects that I started, that I always was my own customer, like my first customer, or that I at least knew my first customer from my friend's circle or my colleague's circle, something like that. I think it's the best way to start, even the indie hacking way, because you already know someone will use this either way.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You just mentioned that you will not work full-time employed anymore, but off the podcast, you already said that your decision is not to go completely into Superstarter and do 5 days a week or 4 days a week that, but you're actually seeking a part-time job again. What was your decision there?
Probably the most deciding factor there was some kind of security, because of course, as I already mentioned, right now Superstarter makes some good money, actually some good money that I could live off if it would be recurring. But the truth, it's not. And I've seen in the past that when you don't put the same effort that I'm putting in right now, that the outcome will be less than that. And so at least for a while, I want to have some more security. And I think that's maybe also some good old German feeling here that we need to have a fixed job that pays the rent and everything else is a bonus. Of course, it would be amazing to make this or maybe something around this my full-time job, so to speak. But I think I'm not far away, but it's a hard way to get there, especially in this area where, as you mentioned, there's a lot of competition and it's also a lot of work to actually make some more money and get new customers all the time.
Yeah, and I think what people might also, that are not from Germany or not from Europe specifically, or more generally, is that you have, like, if you start a business like this and you make serious revenue, which you have already surpassed in German tax law, then you need to, like, first you need to pay the income tax, and then if you actually start a business, you need to pay a sales tax and a business tax and
insurances and all that
exactly.
stuff.
And then all of a sudden, like, 4,000 euros a month are not really that much money coming into your bank account in the end. So
you can at least calculate half of it for taxes.
Which is the same for us freelancers as well. And we don't even pay business tax, so it's even worse for businesses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And another thing that we haven't talked about yet is that you are not alone in building Superstarter. You have another version of Superstarter, which is done by someone else, who is Fabian Beer. Would you like to talk about more about that?
When I released the first version, I just thought about building this for Next.js, but I've worked with Nuxt. So for everyone who doesn't know Nuxt, it's basically the very same thing as Next.js, just in the Vue ecosystem, Vue.js ecosystem. And I've worked with Vue and Nuxt already on my previous job, and I really, really like it. And there's actually a huge market there too. So I think, especially in the US, React and Next.js is still a little bit bigger, but I see a lot of companies, especially in Europe, starting to use Vue.js and for applications Nuxt. And so, yeah, when the last version was released and I saw that it's actually, that there is a lot of demand for it, I thought, how could we grow this? Like, what other things could we do besides adding new features to the existing version? And one thing, obviously, is to expand that and to get more customers. And for me, since I know how Nuxt works and how amazing Nuxt is, that was the logical step. So as we've talked about, there are other frameworks in the React ecosystem like Remix, and there are already a lot of boilerplates for that, and there are also some boilerplates for Nuxt. But since I have experience with it, and since there are actually a lot of parallels between Nuxt and Next, for me, it was the logical step to expand to Nuxt. And so to not put even more pressure on me, since, as you said, I still have a full-time job, I wanted to get someone else on board who, on the one hand side, does the implementation work and also takes over some of the support work. Also, admittedly, someone who is more of an expert in that area. And that's why I got Fabian on board, because he has some really, really good experience with Nuxt. Actually, he had some pull requests on the actual Nuxt framework itself. And yeah, so I'm really happy to have him working on that version. And we are very close to being able to release it. So currently preparing some content for it, and also the landing page that we have the two versions on there. And yeah, hopefully I can release it in the next month.
And what kind of deal is this? Like, does he keep all of the revenue for the Nuxt.js version? What, if you can talk about that, did you do a split in half basically there?
No, we agreed on a 30-70 split, 70 for him, because he does most of the work of implementation and also some of the support work. But we agreed that I'm going to do most of the marketing efforts. So for us, that was a fair deal. And I think to keep it under the same brand also embraces some kind of, is already some kind of marketing, because there is Superstarter got some kind of name in the scene, so to speak. Yeah. And so that's basically a plus for that already, more than you would have when you would start from scratch without some kind of brand behind it. Yeah, so that's where we're currently at.
And also, you mentioned just today on Twitter, you said that Fabian is coming on board for Superstarter, right? And I imagine that's mostly for the Nuxt.js version. But you also said that you're still looking for more developers. What's the, like, what's the goal there? What's the next iteration or revision for Superstarter there?
That's hard to say. So last year, I released a plan for this year that I couldn't really realize because of time issues. And also, like, the new next version took me longer than I expected it to, because there were some serious issues that had to be resolved first, and mm-hmm. the plugins were not ready, and we had to do some work with them to get everything working as I wanted it to. But for me, the next iteration, besides some additional features to the existing starter kit, would be some kind of mobile starter kit. We're thinking about either Ionic or React Native. Ionic would have the great benefit of also being framework agnostic, so you could use React, Vue, or Angular to build your mobile app. And since we built everything in a monorepo, you could actually share some of the code, like your stylings, maybe even some UI components between the mobile app and the web application. And I don't know where we're going with that. Maybe we're going to expand to other frameworks like SvelteKit. Looks very promising. The future will, we'll see what the future will hold.
I kind of love Svelte as an idea, but I don't really like the syntax yet. I think my next pick would have been, I'm not sure if something like Next.js already exists. I think they're still working on it, is the Solid framework. I really like that they kind of took React and made it easier.
Yes, they actually have one, and I think it's called
Solid Start.
SvelteKit and Solid Start.
I'm thinking that those two still are battling out who wins the next round of technology frameworks, but I think they're very interesting. Yeah, let's not get too much into the tech part before we start with that. So is the idea to kind of build Superstarter to a point to have a company with like more than 2 or 3 employees building different parts of it? Or is that not something that you have on your mind right now?
Honestly, I don't know. I am taking this day by day and actually just doing what feels right for me at the moment. Since this is just a side project, and I don't want to do two big jumps, because as we said before, that would of course require me to do a lot more work of this, and I don't want to get to the point where I'm not able to offer my customers the service or to put enough work into the products that they are actually of the quality standard I want them to be. So I'm rather taking this the bootstrap indie hack away, that we grow it organically and see where it's going. But of course, it would be nice to have some kind of company of this. And as I said, I don't know where it's going. And for me, it's exciting to just have the journey.
Another thing that I have written down here, it's kind of breaking the structure of this interview a bit, but I'm still very interested. What was until now, like mm-hmm. your biggest mistake creating Superstarter?
That's a good question. I mean, I made a lot of mistakes with it. And my very first mistake was to release this product without any preparation. I just put it out there because my expectations weren't too big, but I just put it out there and waited for feedback to come in. And I didn't actively collect feedback in the beginning. I started with that after 2 or 3 months. And that was probably one of the biggest mistakes, to not try to get feedback or actually validate the idea. And probably the second biggest mistake I made was to price it too low in the beginning. Mm-hmm. So I started selling this for, I'm not sure, I think it was $49. And that gets you the wrong customers. That gets you customers who expect you to give them hours of support for these $49, and then actually requesting a refund because you're not giving them enough or something. And actually, the real growth of the product started when I charged $149, which was after 3 or 4 months into the product. And now I'm at $349 regular price, currently having that launch offer of $249. That's my tip to everyone starting a product: don't be afraid of requesting a higher price than what you think would be a good price for it.
first, I completely agree on the high price, which isn't that high, even especially as a freelancer. I can just write that off as a tax, as an expense, right? But on the other hand, if you think about what your time's worth and how the product is priced, it's a really, really cheap deal. But what do people say now to you, now with the 249 or 349 price attached to it?
So from the customers that I have right now, no one ever mentioned anything that the price was too high. Actually, they said I could price it higher because, as you said, I mean, $249 or $349 are in most countries like the US or Germany, it's maybe 2 or 3 hours of a developer. So in comparison, that's really not much money. The only thing is when I started offering parity pricing a few months ago. For those who don't know what that means, it's basically offering the product for different prices based on the purchasing power of the country you're selling it in, which means that for India, for example, that has, of course, a lot smaller purchasing power than the US, for example, it's, I think, 70% discounted, which sounds a lot, but in comparison, the price is still relatively high there. But that's something where I often get asked from people from India, for example. They still say, okay, this is very, very high price for the money I make. We get some discount on it. But as I said, from especially the US and Germany and Europe in general, there has actually never been complaints about the price.
And I think it's very easy now to actually set up the parity pricing thing, right? It's, I think, built in into Lemon Squeezy and Paddle, I guess.
It's not built into Lemon Squeezy, but there is a nice tool called Parity Deals that you can easily set up, and that will basically automatically create discount codes in Lemon Squeezy. So you connect it to your Lemon Squeezy account, and then you say, okay, I want to do it for that product, and it will automatically create discount codes based on the purchasing power of the countries. So I had that set up in half an hour.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. I think I might have to set up something like that for my tool as well, as it's a podcasting tool. Everyone kind of does podcasts today, every country on the world. So that might be important. I have another question before we go into the nerd zone. What's your outlook on Superstarter and your personal Indie Hacker journey for like the next 5 years? Is the goal to just stick with Superstarter, make it bigger and bigger, fill out the roadmap even more? Or do you really think about starting another SaaS business or whatever?
So for now, with the fact in mind that I'm still going to have a full-time job for a while, I'm just going to grow it at the pace I'm currently doing and to try to make it the best possible starter kit for Next and Nuxt and whatever framework is to come there. But maybe there's going to be more to it.
I kind of hate that question myself because I don't know if where I live in 5 years, I don't know what I will be working on. It's kind of always very obfuscated, right?
I mean, for a larger company, of course, that would be problematic to not have a clear plan, at least for the next few years. But since this is still a side project, I think it's fine.
Kind of irrelevant, right? Okay. We have a few other questions that are very technical. Usually we try to avoid that in the podcast, but as this project is very technical and I want to talk about that stuff, we're going to into the nerd zone. I will kind of animate that later in the editing. So we're going to talk a little bit about the technologies that you actually built in. So the first question is maybe as a starter for the developers listening, what are the main technologies that are built into Superstarter?
So the core of it obviously is Next.js as the framework for your application. That means the front end and also some parts of the backend, because I'm heavily utilizing the serverless functions built into Next.js for things like the API, the webhooks, also authentication paths and so on. But unlike the default Next.js app, I'm not just using that these serverless functions and to return data, but actually to add a tRPC API. For those who don't know what that is, it's basically some libraries and some it's also some kind of framework to have type-safe communication between your backend and your frontend. It's somewhat similar to GraphQL in a way that you define queries and mutations with resolvers that you can then call from your application. But in TypeScript, without all that GraphQL code generation, and yeah, it's really cool technology in my eye. Yes, you actually posted a video last week. I think that was a cool demonstration of what it can do. And for database access, we integrate Prisma because it just gives you the, in my opinion, really really powerful ability to basically switch your database at any given point. You define the schema, Prisma does all the migrations for you. Also, when you change the schema, Prisma also does the seamless upgrade of your database and so on. And as I said, if you want to change the database because suddenly your database provider increases the prices by 10 times, you can easily do so, get the data out by a dump, then migrate to another database and all that within a few minutes. And that's basically the core of the whole application, since there is no backend as a service as in V1 anymore. So in the first version of Superstarter, the starter kit was very Superbase focused. So it used all the features of Superbase, like authentication, the database, the storage, and so on. And you can still use that. You can still use the database of Superbase. You can still use the storage if you want. You can not so easily use the authentication, because for that we integrated LuShout, which gives you some nice benefits. The first of them being you completely own the data and have full control over the authentication flow. And you already said that was something that was working fine for you when mm-hmm. you implemented it.
Yeah, it's a very annoying process when you actually have to do it 100% yourself, but the way Lucia actually does it, together with the subscription stuff and the database objects, and you kind of have to find a way to bind the user to the subscription to the data objects that they own, yeah, is kind of really easy with Lucia Auth and in the Superstarter context there.
And another benefit of it is, as I said, if you were to switch the database provider, you actually keep the user data. Mm-hmm. You're not limited to one specific authentication provider. And that is something I think that is crucial if you want to scale up your SaaS in sometime in the future. Because a lot of these authentication providers, they are free or really cheap in the beginning, and they make the money of the people or of the applications that then get to a certain amount of users, and from mm-hmm. there on it gets incredibly expensive. And since you're locked in into their servers, there's no way out. And that's something I wanted to avoid with this. So that's why we went with Lucia, yeah.
One thing that we actually talked about on Twitter already, you asked the community question why or what part of your stack would be the biggest issue for people, I guess, yes, was the question. Yeah. And I answered Next.js 13 app router, which kind of got a lot of critique in the last few weeks and months. Why do you think that is? And what are we missing that you already see in the app router?
So I agree that there is, from when you're used to the pages router of Next.js, there's a huge mind shift necessary to really get a good feel with the app router, because when you build a large application, it's important that you have a good way to use server components and client components for yourself. In the beginning, I had a lot of issues where I suddenly ran into, okay, this cannot be done on a client component, but then I needed to load the data, so I had to do it in a server component, so that's one thing that you actually have to rethink the way you build the application. And the other thing, and that's something that is still not perfect, but I hope is going to be optimized, and is the development performance of the Next.js application with the app router. So the production performance is really, really good. I deployed the beta and also already some production, the demo of Superstarter, also some production apps with it already, and the production performance is really good. I've got no complaints there. But in the development mode, and I think you noticed that too, there are sometimes really long delays of 10 seconds or something. And that it's not a deal breaker, but I think we are used to something better with the Pages router, because everything felt instant. It was probably the same performance with the production, like with the production app.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the case here. Of course, they are working on it with the Turbo Pack bundler and so on. But right now, yeah, it feels like they released it too early, because mm-hmm. it feels like a step back in terms of developer experience. But yeah, in my opinion, it is a framework with the app router that is production ready.
That was my feeling as well, that they released the app router too early. That the whole package, like the app router, is fine. There is things you can criticize or that feel a little weird, that you can have a layout component in like every folder down your route path. But I think the biggest part is that the developer experience doesn't feel as nice. And obviously, that's the first thing that people see when they start using it, right? And not pushing to production and then look at the code. They're looking in the developer experience, in the development mode at it, right?
But I think it's something that is optimizable. So I am really convinced that we will see something better than this in the future. Actually, hopefully today is the next year's conf. Maybe we'll see something new there. And also, I think still with the slight delays that are currently showing up, the benefits of it, as you said, with the layouts, with the error handling, with the ability to load data right in your component, with just an async, that's so incredibly powerful that it outweighs the slightly worse developer experience.
Yeah, I kind of have to say, and I think that's a big compliment to you, I started with Next.js 13 the moment it came out, pretty much. I think I got the first patched version of it or something. And I kind of felt very lost with that, because I didn't really understand client and server components there. I think that was the biggest issue for me. And seeing how routing works in your starter kit and how client and server components work kind of help clearing that up. So if anyone tries to actually get into Next.js 13, I think the biggest issue, at least for me, was to understand exactly how do client and server components work, how do they work together with routing, because I think that's the part where I got stuck. Yeah, I think that's the biggest issue.
Yeah, as I said, it took me also some time in the beginning, and that's also one of the reasons why the second version took me so long, because it just felt like I'm starting to learn a new framework.
And then one thing we haven't talked about is the whole front end UI thing that you actually also include, which is components and stuff. And you use one of my absolutely dearest things that the last few years have brought, which is Tailwind, and also that together with Radix UI, which is a headless component library, which means, for the people that haven't worked with them yet, that the headless UI Radix actually only defines what the component does. For example, a drop-down menu, it has to be opened somewhere, it has to be closed, it has to show an item list. If you click somewhere else, it should close again, but it doesn't define at all what the styling looks like. Yeah, talk to me about that.
I mean, I think we've seen a movement towards that. I mean, obviously Tailwind has been the biggest player in styling web applications in the last years, and I think for a reason. Because it just feels so good working with it, and feels so easy to work with it, and also the whole ecosystem of it. So there are so many great plugins. I use a plugin for defining CSS variables, for example, in Superstarter. The whole IDE extension stuff, where you can automatically see the values, get auto completion, have class sorting, and all that stuff is pretty good, and it just feels natural to design your application with Tailwind. And the other thing is basically caused by this move towards Tailwind, in my opinion, that you not have the, like it was with Bootstrap, that you have frameworks, CSS frameworks, that define components, but rather that you just style the components themselves in the code. So meaning that you could basically override any style at any point. And that's where these headless components shine, because it's most of the, like, there are hundreds of component libraries, but most of them mm-hmm. do the same thing. They have the same components like buttons, inputs, tooltips, dialogues, whatever. And below that, there's the same logic for all of them, because there's no real magic to that.
Yeah.
But every company, every brand wants their own look to them. And at a certain point, the abilities that something like Bootstrap offered to customize the styles were not enough, or it actually made the components worse when you try to override the styles so that it matches your brand's design, and then it was not, then the components were not that good anymore. And mm-hmm. the power of these headless components is that you can make them look exactly like you want, but don't have to reinvent the wheel of component logic. Probably the most prominent example of this is Shed CM UI, mm-hmm. which is in fact the library, or which is in fact the base for Superstarter. So the only thing I did was to change some of the looks so that the Superstarter app doesn't look like 90% of the SaaS applications coming out today. But I think that's incredibly powerful, to have components that can be fully customized in the look and still have a complete setup that's ready for you to use. Because headless components alone are not that much of a time saver. Yep. You still have to define everything yep. from like the borders to the little drop-down arrows and so on. And that takes then a lot of time. Then you could probably better use some Bootstrap stuff for sure.
And also, for a headless library, if you're using Tailwind, you never have to think about colors, the font sizes, stuff like
exactly,
that,
yeah.
because all of that is like defined once in the Tailwind config, which is kind of yeah. why they work so well together. I have already seen in your starter kit that you started incorporating AI stuff into it. What's yeah. your stance on that, and how far do you want to take this? Like, do you want to add LangChain to it at some point, or do you want to add the Next.js AI package to it, something like that?
It's actually using the Vercel AI SDK. So you can, if you want, use LangChain, for example. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I try to, or at least the base version of Superstarter, I try to not put too much example code in there, because that means if you're not using that 100%, you need to get rid of it. And the more I put in that you need to get rid of it,
yeah.
that makes it more complicated than it helps you. What I definitely am going to do is to add more examples and more guides on how to work with the AI integration and how to do things like streaming for the AI requests and so on. But I don't plan on putting too much sample code into the starter kit, because not everyone is building AI applications, even though it seems like
not
that. But yeah, I mean, I still want to offer the ability and, of course, some examples of that. But if you have like concrete feature requests, I would love to put them on the roadmap. If you have some ideas what we could integrate with AI related stuff.
Yeah. And I think you're absolutely correct that having too much example code will be a problem, because I will just delete all of it that I don't need, which yeah. I think is a good stance. I think that actually the idea of going and posting different blog posts for different ideas, like how do I build yeah. an AI SaaS with Starter, how do I build an ERP with Superstarter, whatever, is kind of, I think, the better approach, I guess,
yeah.
to not have too much example code.
Maybe that will be part of the video tutorial series. So
yeah, exactly. Could
closing
be, yeah.
the circle here.
Yeah. I'm looking really forward to those videos, yeah. We have two finishing questions coming up, Jonathan. Then we're already through this podcast episode. Those are always the same, so we can kind of compare what people are saying. The first one being, what are you excited about right now, either technology and work-related or not?
Wow, that's a good question. So actually, it's technology related, but not so much development related, but it's AI related. So actually, I think what's going on in terms of the AI brought to customers by the large technology companies currently mm-hmm. is something that is like, for me, it feels a little bit like the release of the iPhone, because I think we're at a point here where technology will change so massively in the next month we're actually seeing new use cases every day. And I'm really excited to see that, like, that these things like Google Bard and whatever Apple is working on are being integrated in our, like, in our daily life, and hopefully at some point into things like the voice assistants and something. Because imagine having something like ChatGPT making Siri actually helpful. Mm-hmm. That would be something where I think things could really change. And I think it's an exciting time for technology lovers currently.
I think it's embarrassing, actually, that Apple's Siri is still like it is like two or three years ago. Yeah. I think, and I hope that Apple is working on something big there. I just want Siri to actually create correct calendar entries and stuff like that, and correctly set a timer, which is pretty much the only thing it can do now. So I don't have that high hopes, and I hope I'm not getting disappointed with those. Yeah, so we would see. Actually, I just read an article that two ex-Apple employees now created a new company, and they're working on something you can kind of clip on your, like, front of your shirt, and it can interact with you with voice. Sounds a little bit like the dystopian film Her, which kind of describes exactly that. But we'll see what they come up with. We are up to our last question, which is, what would you, if you imagine yourself at the start of your indie hacker career, or someone asks you about it, what's like the one lesson or advice you would give someone that's just starting out with an indie hacker career?
And I think most people who are, especially developers, are actually not aware of how much value they are creating with maybe even the smallest tool. So put it out there, get some feedback, and then price it at a good price.
I once read an article on Y Combinator, like the 10 best tips to improve your startup. And like number 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9 was all increase your prices.
Yeah.
I think that's actually like the thing you just said. I think it's brilliant advice, thinking about what value you create. And also to add to that, what kind of knowledge you create for yourself, even though the business might not be successful, never underestimate how much you learn from it. Yeah,
but exactly.
Really brilliant advice. I love this.
So I'll keep it with that.
Thank you for being here, Jonathan. Thank you for taking the time. And yeah, have a nice evening.
You too.
Bye. And that's our episode. Thank you for sticking with us to the end. You can find Jonathan on Twitter with username Jonathan_Wilke. That's JonathanWilke. You can find links to his product there as well. I hope you enjoyed what you heard. We're always happy to hear feedback. If you're building an indie hacker business yourself and want to be part of the show, we're also really happy to hear from you. You can find me on Twitter with username IceBearLabs, that's IceBearLabs, or send me a mail to tobias@icebearlabs.com. And you can also now find this podcast on Twitter with the handle CodeConquerPod. We also have a website you can check out. We're posting articles about the biggest learnings of each episode there as well. Go to codeandconquer.fm to find out more. If you're one of the people who listen to this podcast on the Apple Podcast platform or the Spotify platform, please consider rating our show. It lets other people discover this podcast and helps us grow this even bigger. Thank you so much for that. Till next time.